the chants used at a sung or high mass. The focus of this discussion will be highly practical. Its purpose is not to explain Gregorian chant or to discuss the many alternatives that are available in the chants of the Mass. Let me begin first with a very brief musical explanation for those who might have the background to understand this. The others may have to rely on simply picking up the melodies by ear or by listening to recordings. The chant notation has four lines, unlike the five lines of the modern musical notation. There are also two clefs, one a C clef, which looks like the letter C, which has its middle focused on one of the lines of the staff. The other is the F clef, which looks like the C clef, except that to the left of the C, there is another node, one might call it, which is focused around a line of the staff. And that line is the F line, whereas with the C clef, the line that is focused upon by the clef is the C line. So that is easy to remember. Now, the purpose for bringing this up is that for those of who may know modern musical notation, if they know the natural or the C scale, they know that there is a half step between E and F and between B and C. And this is true in the Gregorian notation as well. Therefore, identifying the clef and the line which is the C or the F will assist you to know when the half step occurs in the scale. The second thing to notice is that there are a number of different shaped notes, and although these may go back to an ancient distinction that was made in the notes, there really isn't much practical value in it today, so that for practical purposes you can interpret all of the notes as being of the same length. With three exceptions. The first exception is the dotted note, which in the Gregorian notation is twice the length of the single note. The second exception is the note with the horizontal bar over it, called the horizontal epicema, which is interpreted differently by different musicians, but it certainly means at least a lengthening of the note, probably not as long as the dotted note. The third exception is the note that is known as the chorisma. This is a note that is usually part of a three-note set or neume, and it is identified by having ridges on the top and the bottom. This denotes that the preceding note would get a bit longer hold, and the chorisma note itself will get a shorter note. it again, perhaps something roughly like 1.5 to 1.5 in ratio, or perhaps 2/3 of a triplet in modern notation. Now let me speak briefly about the location of the music for the Mass. The music traditionally would be found in the Kyrielle, which is a liturgical book containing the chants of the ordinary of the Mass. There is also a book called the Graduale Romanum, which contains the propers of the Mass and some additional material. Another book, which is not an official liturgical book, but is a compilation of many of the Gregorian chants from the Kyrielle and from the Graduale, is called the Liber Usualis, and that is the book that most singers use because it contains a wide variety of material and runs almost 2,000 pages. This is the book that I will be referring to, as it is the most commonly used and the most convenient. Now, there are two forms of the sung Mass, which are called first the Missa in Cantu and the Missa Cantata. The main distinction being that the Missa in Cantu is a simpler form, and in it the celebrant simply sings those parts of the Mass which are to be sung, and everything else about the Mass remains the same. The Missa Cantata is a more elaborate form of the sung Mass and involves the use of incense and certain other formalities. Now, of course, the full form of the Mass, the Missa Solemnis, or solemn High Mass, which uses a celebrant, a deacon and a subdeacon, is also chanted. But the normal form that would be encountered is the sung Mass, either the simpler form or the more elaborate form. In any case, the music of all three of these is, for all intents and purposes, the same. The difference is in the ceremonial rather than in the music. Let us begin then with the first chanted piece in the Mass, and we'll actually, before the Mass, we will go through the Asperges, which is the sprinkling ritual that is commonly held immediately before a sung Mass. It's usually rubrics direct that it be celebrated before the main Mass of the day. If you turn to that music, you will see some of what we have already been talking about. You will see the C clef around the second line from the bottom. So that identifies where the note C would be. Now, I should point out that in Gregorian chant, these notes have no particular pitch. They are simply letters used to indicate relative pitches, so that from B to C would be a half step, from A to B would be a whole step, but this would not necessarily correspond, for example, to the notes A, B, and C on a piano. Gregorian chant is relative, it is not absolute. The pitch of the notes is determined at least the initial pitch, is determined by where the celebrant or the scola would set it, and all of the other notes then are sung in pitches relative to that. So that, for instance, if a celebrant is a bass voice, the notes would tend to be lower than if the celebrant were a tenor voice. You will also notice that some of the notes are square-shaped, some of them are diamond-shaped. The one over the me of Asperger's me has a dot, and that is the doubled length. Also, the first group of three notes on Domina, you will notice, and sometimes it's rather difficult to see in the print, but the second note is a chelisma. It has ridges on the top and the bottom, therefore the preceding note is held a bit longer and the chelisma note is held a bit shorter. The rule is that when one note is above another, the bottom note is sung first, and you see an example of that in the first syllable of Asperger's name. Notice that that horizontal line, the horizontal epicema, can also go over one note, for instance, the second syllable of hisopo, or over several notes, as in the second syllable of mundabor. Now, since this instruction is directed to the celebrant, I will not be describing the scola part, but simply the celebrant's part. The celebrant would intone what is called the incipit, that is the beginning of the antiphon, and that is the part of the selection up to the what is marked with an asterisk in the Liber Usualis. So the incipit, or the intonation, is Asperges me, and the melody goes as follows. Asperges me. That is all the celebrant intones. The rest is sung by the scola. Now notice that in Eastertide, the vidi aquam is used instead of the Asperges me, and that intonation goes as follows. Vidi aquam. Of course, the Latin should be pronounced as clearly and distinctly as possible. Now, there are some versicles and prayers that follow the intonation of the Asperges me or the Vidi aquam. And this brings us into what is called the ferial tone. The ferial tone is simply sometimes known as recto tono, that is, on the straight tone. It simply means a prayer or versicle chanted on one note. Do, 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 basically with the same length except at the ending. There is a variant of this which is used in the Asperges me and the Vidi aquam and certain other prayers such as the litanies and the washing of the feet on Maundy Thursday. This is called the semi-ferial tone, the only difference being that at the end of a prayer and at the end of a conclusion, the voice is lowered a minor third for the full stop or the period. That is, it would go something like this. Do, 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 la. Therefore, the versicles and prayers at the conclusion of the Asperges would be chanted as follows. Hostende nobis Domine misericordiam tuam, et salutare tuum da nobis, Domine exaudi orationem eam, et clamor meus a te veniat. Dominus vobiscum, et cum spiritu tuo, oremus. Exaudi nos Domine Sancte Pater Omnipotens Aeterna Deus, et niter redimieri Sanctum Angelum Tuum de Celis, qui custodiat, foveat, protegat, visitet atque defendat omnes habitantes in hoc habitaculo. Per Christum Dominum Nostrum. I'm chanting this a little bit more slowly than would probably be the normal, so that you can hear it more clearly. Also notice that in the prayer, at the punctuation, particularly at the colon and semicolon, there is a lengthening of the syllable to indicate that it is at the end of a sense group. Now to the ordinary of the Mass. Again, the celebrant would begin the intonation, the incipit, for the following parts of the Mass: the Kyrie, the Gloria, on those days when the Gloria would be said, the Credo, on those days when the Credo would be said, the Sanctus, the Agnus Dei, and then finally the Ita Missa Est, or Benedicamus Domino. Now, there are a number of Mass settings that are found in the Liber Usualis, and each one of them has a different incipit. Now, some of these are reprinted in the Missal, in the ordinary of the Mass, or in an appendix to the Missal. However, for all practical purposes, the celebrant memorizes these, or if he is uncomfortable, the organist may play softly the melody so that he can then repeat it in chant. Now, there are a number of Masses, and they are, some of them are used at different times of the year, although this is not of necessity. For this example, I'm going to use Mass 8, which is probably the most commonly known, called the Missa de Angelis. It has an intonation which is a bit more comfortable to the modern ear than some of the others. So I will simply go down and sing, so that you can hear, the incipits of these parts of the Mass that the celebrant would intone. First, the Kyrie. Kyrie. I will point out in that, if you notice on the third note, there is a flat, kind of a hollow diamond with a line on it, before that third note. That indicates, since normally you notice that that is a C clef with the line being C, therefore, as I explained before, the space below it would be B, and that would be a half step below, because, it would be natural if you know music. The flat indicates that it is a half step lower, therefore instead of the usual half step between the B and the C, in this case it would be a whole step. Going on to the Gloria.
Gloria in excelsis Deo.
To the Sanctus.
Sanctus.
And to the Agnus Dei.
Agnus Dei.
Notice there that the second and the third notes are on the same space. There is no break when you sing it, even though they are grouped separately. And then finally, the Ita Missa Est.
Ita Missa Est.
Now the Credo, which is in actually a separate section in the Liber Usualis. This is Credo 1, since the credos are not part of the numbered masses in the front. This is the first credo.
Credo in unum Deum.
Now we come to the chanting of the prayers and readings. That I will use here for the prayers is what is known as the festal tone. Now, I have already spoken about the ferial tone and the semi-ferial tone. The ferial tone is used in masses of the fourth class, that is, ferial masses, and the festal tone is used for masses of the first, second, or third class, so Sundays would be included in that. You remember that the ferial tone is simply recto tono, that is, it chants all of the words of the prayer on the same note, no drop at the end. The festal tone is a little different. The festal tone, well, first of all, the prayer itself is divided into two sections, the prayer itself and the conclusion being the part that begins per Dominum Nostrum or one of the other conclusions. Now, in the prayer itself, what begins directly after the Oremus, first a metrum is sung and then a flex, whereas in the conclusion the flex is first and the metrum is second. Now, what is a flex and a metrum? The metrum is the major break in the prayer, and it occurs at the colon in the prayer. The metrum is chanted as follows, and I'm using the example that is given in the Liber Usualis.
Preces nostras que sumus Domine clementer exaudi. Ta-ta-ta-ta-ta
is the metrum. Then it goes on, and the flex is at the comma following. Sometimes it's a semicolon.
Atque apecatorum vinculis absolutos.
Notice that it is simply a drop of a half step. And then the rest of the prayer continues to the period.
Ab omninos adversitate custodi.
Then you begin the conclusion, and remember the flex, that is the half tone drop, occurs first.
Per eundem Dominum nostrum Iesum Christum filium tuum.
And then the metrum at the end of the next phrase.
Qui tecum vivit et regnat in unitate eustem Spiritus Sancti Deus.
And then the per omnia.
Per omnia secula securorum.
The conclusion may be different, but the principle is always the same. Notice that the rising tone in the metrum and the last high tone before the half note drop in the flex are on the accented syllable of the last word. So you have clementer ex audi, the accent being on au, that is the high pitch, and then on the flex, absolutos, the accent being on the last high tone before the half note drop. Now, the last accent can be followed, as according to the Latin rule, by either one or two syllables. So you may have three syllables or two syllables on the high note. For instance, as in the examples given in the Libro Usuales, pietate proseguere. After the accented syllable, there are two syllables, so there are three high-pitched notes. Moriendo confessi sunt. That is an example of a monosyllable ending the sentence, so some adjustment is made since the accent cannot be on the final monosyllable. And examples of the flex, percebimus, notice that there are two syllables on the high pitch before the drop, and the following, correcta sunt, again an example of a monosyllable ending the sentence. Now, let me sing the entirety from the Dominus Vobiscum so you get the total flow. Dominus Vobiscum, oremus, preces nostras quae sumus Domine clementer ex audi, atque peccatorum vinculis absolutos, ad hominos adversitate custodi, per eundem Dominum nostrum Iesum Christum filium tuum, qui tecum vivit et regnat in unitate justem Spiritus Sancti Deus, per omnia saecula saeculorum. I'm seeing it a little slower than probably would be the norm. And also notice that I am deliberately lengthening and softening those syllables or phrases at the metrum and at the flex and at the end of the sentence. This is proper Gregorian procedure. There are in the Libro Usualis several ancient tones called the solemn tone, and the simple tone. Those I'm not discussing in this summary. As I say, there are many variations, and I think for clarity's sake, it is better to stay with the one and be comfortable with it, and then one could move on to the other ones for variety if that is desired. Now we move on to the tone for the epistle. The tone for the epistle can be done in two possible ways. The first way is rectotonal, that is on the same note. And this is a perfectly acceptable way and has the advantage of contrasting the simplicity of the epistle to the gospel, which then has a more elaborate pitching. I will take the example out of the Libro Usualis and chant it rectotono so you can hear how that is done. Lexie Isaiae prophete, surge illuminare Jerusalem, quia venit lumen tuum, et gloria Domini super te orta est, quia ecce tenebre opera.
materiam terram et caligo populos. Super te autem orietur dominus et gloria eius in te videbitur.
And it would continue in that way. Again, on the same note, softening and lengthening a bit the end of the phrase, the phrases, particularly at the period, the colon, the semicolon. The only exception to the recto tono is at an interrogation, that is, at a question that occurs in the text. The interrogation involves the last phrase of the question in the text with two notes being sung on the final syllable. The easiest thing is simply to sing it, and it should become clear, at least to the ear, how the interrogation is handled.
Quis es iste qui venit eodem, tinctis festibus Dei?